WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. All things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be now. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me.
And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that is always, at all times, in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world, what all of us really do want. Now, today's show is about a topic that we've consistently promoted for several decades, actually, as the most effective solution to so many of our health challenges. And that is a primary prevention way of eating. And by primary prevention, I mean we're referring to those measures that prevent the onset of an illness or an injury even before the disease process begins. And of course, those same foods are good for after the disease process begins. But given that we're in the middle of what is now more than half a year of a country on fire with COVID-19, we're going to address prevention as a powerful tool against the worst effects of COVID-19, something you've not been hearing enough of from our government or media outlets. And the great thing about this, now, not that there's anything great about a pandemic, but the great thing about this particular aspect of the solution is that the same solution that works for reducing the worst impacts of COVID-19 is also best for reducing the diseases that kill most Americans every single year. And to help us take on this topic, we're going to be joined by an expert on the topic of prevention, registered dietitian and trained chef, Robin Angman. We're not only going to discuss disease prevention and the best dietary means to boost your immune system, but how to prepare food, how to stock your cabinets, how to shop, how to make a successful transition, and a whole lot more. But before we get into the main part of our show, I'd like to say just a few words about the extreme storm we just experienced here on the East Coast, Isaias, as well as the coronavirus. Isaias brought the strongest winds to New York City that we've seen since Hurricane Sandy. Close to 80 mile per hour gusts were on Long Island. They ripped down power lines and threw tree branches and debris everywhere. I saw it firsthand. The storm was soon followed by the second largest outage in Con Edison's almost 200-year history, which left 250,000 of its customers and more without power. Several hundred thousand Long Islanders were without power. We, in our home here, were without power in our neighborhood for about 5 days, and that actually resulted in the delaying of the taping of this show for a week. We should all consider that this kind of event is only going to get more common going forward with climate change. The effect of climate change on storms and hurricanes is complicated, but research shows rising temperatures are causing hurricanes to become more intense, produce more rainfall, and cause higher storm surges. And when you understand that the hottest 19 years on record have all occurred in the last 20 years, you see that rising temperatures are a reality and are here to stay. The National Weather Service last week predicted that there could be up to 25 named storms this year. There are only about a dozen named storms in an average hurricane season. 25 this year, a dozen in an average season. Isaias is already the ninth named storm of this year, a level that usually isn't hit until October, and we're in August. The director of National Weather Service stated that it's shaping up to be one of the most active seasons on record. And unfortunately for those watching the climate change news, the situation is getting more and more urgent and alarming as the days, weeks, and years go by. Just this week, an iceberg the size of Manhattan broke off of Canada's final intact ice shelf. Luke Copeland of the Departments of Geography at the University of Ottawa said This summer has been up to 9 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than the average over the period from 1981 to 2010. And the region has been warming at 2 to 3 times the global rate. That ice islands that broke off is 230 to 260 feet thick. And it's split into 2 big icebergs and lots of smaller ones that could pose a problem for vessels that are going through that area. And as I mentioned, the larger piece is about the size of Manhattan. Climate change is now real and apparent in our world. Switching topics, I'm also going to say a few words about the COVID-19 pandemic. Deaths in the U.S. have risen above 160,000, way higher than our leaders were telling us that they would be. Overall, we seem to be treading water. That is, we've been largely, but not consistently, closing down for months. Some places closed too late, some opened too early, some didn't close very much. With very little coordination at the federal level, we're not making enough advances in testing volume or speed. We haven't been tracing as some countries have done, and the death rate in the U.S. is much higher than in many other countries. Listen to this. While our population makes up less than 5% of the world's population, we have about 25% of the world's deaths from COVID-19. And let's look at our performance compared to some other countries. While Germany has 110 deaths per every million in their population, Japan has 8 deaths per million. China has 3 deaths per million population. In the US, what do you think it is? 470 deaths per million population. And our nation is still not unified in terms of wearing masks, staying home, whether or not to go to school, whether or not to play football, whether hydroxychloroquine and a mix of drugs is effective, whether this whole pandemic is a government plot to force us all into vaccines. It's a real mess, and one that's pretty clearly a result of a vacuum where leadership and consistent education should exist at the federal level. We're experiencing a hodgepodge of advice and information dissemination, with the president on one hand contradicting his top medical experts and even calling them names, like pathetic. And then on the other hand, he'll turn around and say that he respects them. Politics, misinformation, and a crazy, crazy lack of leadership again is making it impossible for us to come up with a path to end this episode, even while other countries have done that. It's a pretty dreary picture. And from what I've been seeing, much worse than anybody thought could happen in a country that's supposed to be one of the wealthiest and the most technologically capable in the world. That's my assessment on one level. On another level, however, despite health authorities bucking the president and attempting to send clear messages about the need to wear masks, stay at home, social distance, wash hands, etc., there has been no mention from our public health officials that I've seen about the immense personal power we have to reduce our own risk of suffering from the worst impacts of COVID-19. We've been talking about this particular aspect since early on in the pandemic, I think starting in March, and nothing has changed. Sadly, this is not out of character for our governments to not provide information about preventing and reversing disease, even though we know how to do that. What kills most Americans is not communicable diseases, but chronic degenerative diseases, heart disease, cancer, chronic lower respiratory disease, diabetes, stroke, and more. We know what's causing these diseases, and we know what can prevent, and in many cases, reverse most of them. The great thing, again, not that you can have a great thing about a horrible situation, but the great thing is that the same steps we can all take to prevent these chronic diseases are also effective in helping us to reduce our risk of suffering the worst impacts of COVID-19, because those worst impacts are very much being felt by those who have the pre-existing medical conditions that are often the result of our dietary choices. That makes education on food choices an even more powerful topic of discussion for today's world than it already is. And it is already a very powerful discussion, minus COVID, heart disease, stroke, cancer, diabetes, killing hundreds of thousands and millions every single year unnecessarily. Now, to help us navigate this important topic, we're joined by a registered dietitian and a trained chef with an Associate of Science in Culinary Arts and a Bachelor of Science in Culinary Nutrition, Robin Engman. She's with Nutrition in Motion. You can find out more about them at www.nimrd. That's Nutrition in Motion, N-I-M-R-D, as in registered dietitian.com. And for those of you who have listened to the Healthy Planet radio show over the years, you know that Robin briefly hosted some of our shows prior to relocating to North Carolina last year. Robin is a registered dietitian who loves creating and sharing plant-based meals for everyone. She completed her dietetic internship at Stony Brook University Hospital in Stony Brook, New York. She has a strong background helping people who suffer from metabolic syndrome, which includes obesity, type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, and high blood pressure. And you can find some great videos by Robin on all kinds of food-related topics by looking for upbeat_RD on YouTube. That's upbeat, beat as in beat, B-E-E-T, _RD on YouTube. Robin, welcome back to The Healthy Planet. Robin, welcome back to The Healthy Planet.
Thank you so much for having me.
And part of what we're going to be talking about is boosting one's immune system via the food that we eat. So most people hear a lot about the immune system. There are books about increasing your immunity and all that stuff. But talk about what the immune system actually is. What does it do in our body?
Sure. So in simple terms, I'm not a doctor by any means, so I'll use it. Simple terms that I use to describe it to my clients. It's just a really complex disease-fighting system. It fights disease-causing pathogens such as viruses, parasites, bacteria, and fungi, and then it also removes them from the body. It also works hard to fight any disease-causing changes that occur internally as well, so such as like cancer cells. So pretty much if you come in contact with any of these pathogens that are out in the environment, your immune system should fight it off if it's strong enough. If it's weak, sometimes those pathogens get into our body and then make us ill.
Okay, simple.
Yeah.
So it's like either a suit of armor or an internal response system that keeps us healthy and protected.
Absolutely. And you can have a strong immune system or you can have a weak immune system. And also it recognizes some different pathogens as well. So if you're exposed to something more often, sometimes it recognizes it so well that it learns how to be stronger the next time it encounters it. For example, like chicken pox as a kid, you get it and then your immune system learns from it and then you won't usually get it again.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. We've got smart little bodies here and we don't even have to do anything. It just happens.
It's pretty awesome.
How does that happen?
Yeah, I know.
So your focus has been mainly on helping people maximize health and well-being by having them examine what they put into their mouths. It's pretty basic since we are what we eat, basically. And I mean, in terms of physical substance of our bodies, what we breathe and what we eat is who we become. So in our new world of COVID-19, there's a new way of looking at immunity and there's a new way of looking at what we do in the world in terms of impacting both the world and our bodies. We're seeing that. We're so interrelated. So describe the style of eating that you see as the most effective for boosting our immune system, but not just our immune system for COVID-19, but our health in general.
Yeah, so absolutely. So the diet that I don't want to say a diet, but the way of eating that I usually recommend for people is one that has the most antioxidants. And that would be like a whole food plant-based diet. So that encompasses things like whole grains, beans, nuts and seeds, and then fruits and vegetables. So a lot of times in our standard American diet, we don't get enough of any of those things. Usually it's a bunch of processed meats, processed cheeses, processed carbohydrates, and all kinds of things like that. But with whole food plant-based, you get things that are intact. So the full fruit or vegetable has all those antioxidants, all those vitamins and minerals, without taking anything away from it. So that's the diet I recommend. Even if people don't want to go 100%, I don't think it's always so black and white. I think we need to move towards those foods so people don't have to feel like they don't want to go all the way plant-based. That's okay too. But we need to have more whole food plant-based foods in our regular day-to-day eating.
Right. That's important. The balance of what you do. Nothing you do a couple of times a week is going to be really, unless you're taking arsenic, is going to really terribly impact you. So you don't have to draw that hard line.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's what I like to tell a lot of my clients. So I do like to start kind of slow with them. So sometimes when you say eat more plant-based, you know, it can be kind of overwhelming. But I think if you say, oh, we'll start with a plant-based breakfast, like oatmeal with berries and nuts and seeds in there, that's usually a little bit easier to sell. Yeah, totally easy. So plant-based can be great. I like to go as much as possible. I think why not make my immune system the healthiest it can be and go all the way whole food plant-based. But I want everybody to know that even if you just go towards that direction, you're still doing a ton of good things for your body, especially your immune system.
Right. The journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. And yes. So take an easy step. Take a step that you know is going to lead you in that direction, as opposed to a big leap that you're afraid to make.
Absolutely.
And on the other hand, once you make that big leap, there are rewards that you'll discover down the road when you're on that path.
Energy, lots of energy from eating like that. Good skin. there's lots of good benefits. It also fights disease. So I know that they've been talking a lot about certain diseases that I would say people are more prone to getting the coronavirus if they have some underlying conditions like type 2 diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, and a plant-based diet is known to prevent and even reverse in some cases those diseases.
Yeah, so let's go right into that. Take a moment to explain what each of those conditions is and how a plant-based diet can help, not just with COVID-19, because obviously we're seeing that COVID-19 is something that is impacted, our ability to deal with COVID-19 is something that's impacted by having or not having these pre-existing conditions. But also let's talk about, in general life, what's going to help us be both strong and resilient.
So I think there's kind of a correlation. This is a good question. So kind of a correlation, right? So many of these diseases I'm going to explain are mostly dietary related. There are some genetic situations where people have these diseases because of that. But a weak immune system is also diet related, right? So there's a lot of correlation there. So the first one is diabetes. So I'm going to focus more on type 2 diabetes versus type 1 diabetes. Type 2 is usually dietary related and lifestyle related. And that one is when we can no longer absorb the carbohydrate or the sugar from the foods that we eat, and it ends up accumulating in our blood and it spikes our sugar. We get very low energy from that. So in order to get the sugar into our cells, we need to actually clean out some of the fat that we're eating. So saturated fat that we have in meats and cheeses and things like that, to actually let the sugar get absorbed. We have an absorption issue of sugar. So a lot of times I think with type 2 diabetes, we assume it's the carbohydrate that needs to go,
because
the carbohydrate is what we notice, right? We eat the carbohydrate, our blood sugar rises, and we think, oh, it's the carbs, right? But really, why is that sugar not going into the cell? The answer is our diet that's full of fried foods, high fat dairy foods, meats, processed foods with lots of oil or butter in it. So those are the foods that are clogging up those cells and making no room for the sugar to get in. So that's type 2 diabetes, and it can definitely be reversed or even prevented using a plant-based diet. I've seen it with my clients. All we have to do is take away some of those high fat animal foods, some of those processed foods, and incorporate some of those high fiber foods instead. Fruits, vegetables, whole grains, not processed grains, and beans. So those kinds of foods actually protect against type 2 diabetes. The second one you mentioned, cardiovascular disease, same thing. The same kind of diet can actually help to prevent or even reverse high blood pressure or high cholesterol. There's no cholesterol in plant-based foods, so you're not going to get it from the food that you're eating. And plant-based foods, aside from palm oil or coconut oil, are extremely low in saturated fat. And saturated fat is correlated with raising your cholesterol. So if we get rid of some of those animal-based foods and incorporate some more plant-based foods, you're actually going to see a reduction in your cholesterol. Same thing with high blood pressure. You're not going to have the accumulating fat in your blood, so you're not going to raise that blood pressure. And a lot of plants have this natural ability to open up the arteries. So things like beets and arugula actually have this compound nitrates in it, where it actually opens up our artery wall so we can actually pump more blood through it a lot easier. So there's a lot of things we can do with plants to lower the high blood pressure. Also, if you're avoiding processed foods, it has less salt in it. There's natural salts found in all fruits and vegetables, but it's nothing compared to the salt that you're going to get from a processed food. So automatically, by cutting out some of those processed foods, cheeses, which is a high salt food, you're actually going to lower your blood pressure as well. So again, two diseases that can be reversed or even prevented. And then obesity. So if you remove a lot of the processed foods from your diet and just fill it with whole foods have this thing called fiber. Sometimes people find fiber pretty boring, but I think it's probably one of the best nutrients we have in our food. Fiber actually makes you feel full, so you don't overeat on things. So if you take like a potato, for instance, and you eat a whole potato with skin and everything, it's pretty filling. Take that same potato, peel it, make it into French fries or potato chips, you end up eating 3, 4, 5 times as much to get full, because now we're taking away the water and replacing it with fat. So that's going to be a highly processed plant food that would normally be really healthy. So when we cut out the processing and just eat the food as is, we don't have issues with gaining weight. vegetables, the more vegetables you put on your plate, they're so low in calories that it's going to fill you up, all that bulk, and you're going to end up eating less. If you eat things that don't fill you up, you're going to end up eating more. That's kind of calories in, calories out.
I know you are a fan of potatoes, and you have been for a while.
We talked about it in your last episode, yeah. Potatoes yep. just get a bad rap, so I like to bring up potatoes whenever I can to say it's okay to have a potato. I don't like comparing potatoes to white bread because it's so different. A potato comes out of the ground. Bread is highly processed with salt added and all this other stuff. So
everything's very confusing these days, because not just politically, where there are facts and fake facts and the real facts are being called fake facts, but in the dietary world, you've got the different diets that are focused entirely on eating meat and eating cheese and all these other things that we know cause long-term problems. Yeah. And then they say, oh, you can't go near a piece of fruit because that'll destroy your blood sugar. You can't deal with that. And of course, it's true when you're eating right. that kind of diet, because your body can't handle it. But I can see where the confusion comes in, and I hear that frequently.
That's what I get a lot from my clients that come in. Sometimes their number one reason to come in is just saying, I would like someone to give me advice that I don't have to get from outside because there's too much conflicting information. Yeah. Turn anymore. So they just want one person to talk to have them answer their questions for them. And I'm going to give them, you know, what's out there, all the facts. I'm not going to give them any of those diety gimmicky things that I see online. I'm going to give them just the hard truth. And the truth sometimes is the simpler, the better. So don't overthink it. People, whenever I say eat more plant-based, I feel like we tend to overthink it and think we need to get all these fancy foods at the store. You don't. You really can just get really inexpensive, regular plant-based staples like beans or whole grains, bananas, just easy things like that. Going back to basics. I don't need people to go out and buy the most expensive plant-based burgers or anything like that.
Right. The superfoods and the powders. And
yeah. Yes. I mean, as much, those things are probably all good and well, but we don't need to get that complicated. I call that sometimes more advanced. You could always be healthier, right? But just to start, let's start with the basics. If you want to get fancy later on down the road, after you get the basics down, I think that's fine. If you want to incorporate some acai in your smoothie, go for it. But I think let's just get the basics first.
Right. So the standard American diet is nothing like what you're outlining as an optimal diet, which you refer to as a whole foods plant-based diet. We've talked about many times on this program. So for many, making a switch from the current status quo to something that's so different can be challenging. So mm-hmm. for those who are not well-versed in the hows of eating a plant-based diet, and they haven't even been exposed to it as a reality, it's just a concept to them, give them some tips that'll allow them to ease into it more gracefully.
Right. So the first thing is don't stop eating your favorite foods. So, or meals rather, right? So my favorite plant-based meal is a veggie burger and fries. So something you can easily substitute. If you like a hamburger and fries, just find a really good tasting veggie patty or make your own. I make really good ones. And then just put all the toppings on it that you love. And honestly, it's not really that big of a change. And instead of eating some kind of deep fried French fries, I just cut up some potatoes and put it in my air fryer and I have a burger and fries. So sure. Stick with things that you know. You don't have to reinvent the wheel again, like with all the fancy powders and things like that you were talking about. Those are more advanced. So once you get down the basics of eating a plant-based diet, then you can start experimenting with different ingredients if you want to, but stick with things that you know and recognize, like whole wheat pasta with marinara. You know, it doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to get quinoa yet if you're not ready. You can still stick with brown rice. Just keeping it simple like that. And identifying the plant-based meals that you already eat. Like I was saying before, oatmeal with berries in the morning. Many people eat oatmeal for breakfast, but I don't think anybody says, oh, I'm eating plant-based for breakfast, but you are. So identify those things that you do already. If you make lentil soup for dinner, that might be a plant-based meal that you eat. If you like to do a bean burrito, that might be a plant-based meal you already eat. So just kind of stick with things that you already do, and then stick with foods you already like and just modify the recipe. One of my favorite things to do is Google something that I like to make. I made stroganoff. You know, stroganoff is usually a beef dish, but I modified it myself and used like mushrooms in there and made it taste just like a regular beef stroganoff minus the beef. So there's things that you can do, and there's plenty of resources out there, and people have been inventing these recipes for a long time now that there's not just one variety of stroganoff, there's like 100. So,
yeah, and we'll get into some recipe sites I'll ask you to recommend toward the end of the show as well.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, for anybody that doesn't want to go all the way, like I said before, just start slow. Some people jump all the way in, and I think that's fine. I'm not going to say you can't do that. You can definitely go 100% in. You're going to get the biggest results, and
absolutely,
maybe that would motivate you to stick with it. But if that's not your style, then try like plant-based until dinner. I had a friend that did lunch and breakfast, all plant-based, and then had either fish or chicken at dinner, and then slowly minus a couple dinner meals. And then eventually she just said, I like eating this way. I'm going to go all the way. So start as slow or as fast as you want. Find a dietitian in your area that supports you in plant-based eating and go from there.
And also in this time where we have a lot of other factors that are related to our diet, once you stop eating so much of the animal products, and then you read a little bit more about climate change and the causes, what's happening to the animals when we're creating meat, taking all that in becomes easier when you're eating less of it. So it's starting an opening. Maybe, again, some people go full hog. That's maybe not the appropriate word for this conversation.
Full hog, yeah.
Full hog. And some people go slowly. And both of them are appropriate for the person who's taking that on. But both of them are also openings to learning more and going further and going toward not just to become more extreme, because it doesn't matter how extreme you are, but going more toward a diet and lifestyle that supports our bodies and the world, which is what we all want.
And I think a big factor of, you know, if you want to go full hog, like you're saying, or ease into it, also what kind of support you have at home, right? So I'm very fortunate. I jumped into this lifestyle with the support of my husband, who also did it too. So it's easier when you have that support system. But if you are trying to make your own separate meals from the rest of the family, it can be a little rough. So again, if anybody wants to go slower because the rest of the family is still eating differently, it's okay to start where you're at. And then hopefully they'll try your food and want to, you know, support you and eat the same things that you're eating. I have, one client who everyone in their family was like, oh, tofu. But then she kept making it so delicious that eventually they tried it and now they ask for it. So plant-based food is really interesting because I think people always have these ideas about plant-based food that's not going to be good, but it's delicious, especially if somebody learns how to cook it really well.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's as good as any other food, as long as you know how to cook it.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of powerful benefits to eating a plant-based diet. Are there any nutrients of concern when you're talking about eating entirely plant-based?
So it's funny. So there are some that stand out to a lot of other people. Like they might say certain nutrients are concerned just for people that eat plant-based, but actually the same ones that are important for us are important for everybody. So anybody I talk to that's eating plant-based or not, I think everyone needs to make sure to be on some kind of vitamin D or getting some sunlight. So I would say plant-based or not, vitamin D is pretty important, especially if we're not getting outside. It's even more important in the wintertime. Get tested. I think that's important too. Find out where you're at and figure that out from there. And B12. I think everybody has always heard that plant-based eaters have a hard time getting B12 in their diet. So B12 is found naturally in the dirt. It's a bacteria that is in the dirt and in the water. But since we filter our water and clean the water and we wash our vegetables, we don't get that B12 anymore. So I do think it's important to take some kind of B12 supplement or eat foods that have B12 in it, like fermented foods like tempeh is a good one. Nutritional yeast has some B12 in it. I know my almond milk or my soy milk has B12 in it as well. But get tested as well. I would say get your blood work done if you can and keep checking on that and take a B12 supplement if you want to just make sure you're hitting that mark. But that same thing for people that aren't plant-based. I've had many clients who are low in B12 and don't eat plant-based. So I think that's just a nutrient concern for everybody. Some kind of omega-3, an algae-derived omega-3 would be smart to take if you're plant-based. You can get omega-3s from flax seeds and walnuts and things like that. But there's a better one from algae. If you can do that, it's a little bit better. Iodine, if you're not using iodized salt. So we're in a time where we do a lot of sea salt and Himalayan pink salt, which I'm all for. It's fine. But we don't have that iodine from the salt. And unless you're eating a bunch of seaweed on a regular basis, you might be a little bit low. So I like to make my own sushi rolls and I like to use nori and roll up my own veggie rolls. Or if you go out for veggie sushi or something like that, that's fine. But if you want to keep some iodized salt, it's not the worst thing if you want to sprinkle a little bit on any of your food just to be safe. And iodine is another one that I would recommend that you supplement unless you're getting algae or some kind of seaweed, or if you're using iodized salt. So a lot of people are using the Himalayan pink salt or sea salt, which is fine, but there's no iodine in there. They put iodine in there because we need more iodine in our diet.
Right, so it was intentional.
It was intentional, right? So you can take a supplement if you don't want to use salt, because a lot of plant-based eaters don't like to eat too much salt too. So you can take a supplement for that as well. 150 mcgs is what they say is good. We can always send a link of ones that I like to recommend if you want, Bob. Dr. Greger has a great blog on nutrient recommendations that I think is great.
I'll post that with us.
Yeah. And then calcium and iron are nutrients of concern for everybody, I would say. I wouldn't just say plant-based eaters, but we should make sure that we're getting enough. I think it's just always good to make sure you're getting enough. So aim for calcium-rich foods. You don't really need to take a supplement unless you're not hitting these goals. But some high calcium foods would be collard greens. Actually, they're the number one calcium-rich food. I didn't start eating them until about 4 years ago when I saw the list of calcium-rich foods, and collard greens was superior by far. So I learned to love them. And so those are great. Tofu is a good source of calcium as well. Beans, figs, and plenty other ones, and nuts and seeds and things like that. And then iron, the number one iron one that I have been incorporating into my diet a lot more of is molasses, blackstrap molasses.
Oh yeah.
Has a good amount of iron in it. So it has a strong taste, but you can always incorporate it into baked goods or things like that, or just take a spoonful if you need iron. Okay. Beans and nuts and seeds are also all good iron sources as well. So easy to get from your diet. If you are feeling like you're anemic, I would try food first before you start taking an iron supplement. Look up iron-rich plant foods and try to incorporate those in your diet, because I do think it's easy to get. You just need to kind of identify which foods they're high in.
And the different requirements for iron for men and women?
Women need a little bit more. Women need about 18 milligrams of iron, and it goes up if you're an athlete. So I am an athlete myself, so I run a ton. So you need a little bit more iron if you are an athlete runner. It's also female, so it can go up to like 20, 21, 22 for your iron needs. Pretty easy to get again on plant-based foods.
Good. And this is Bob DiBenedetto on The Healthy Planet on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook, New York. I'm here talking to Robin Angman. Robin Angman is a registered dietitian and trains chef with Nutrition in Motion. You can find her at www.nimrd. That's N, Nancy, I-M, as in medical, R-D, as in registered dietitian.com. And I'm going to move on. I know that this is one of the age-old questions that anytime you talk about a plant-based diet, you're going to get this question. Can you tell me what that question is?
Can you get enough protein on a plant-based diet?
Yes. Yeah. Not everybody knows the answer because it's still a concern.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So absolutely, yes, you can get enough protein on a plant-based diet. I feel like this stemmed from some old research. Back when I was going to school to become a dietitian, they talked about combining proteins, and I'm sure you've heard about this. So where you can only get enough protein if you combine different amino acids of plant foods. So that would be a combination of beans and nuts, or beans and grains, or grains and nuts, just making sure you combine all these foods together to get enough. That's false. Actually, you don't have to combine them anymore. There's no protein combining that's needed or necessary. So it's actually pretty simple now. So as long as you're getting enough protein from beans or nuts and seeds, whole grains, you don't have to do any combining. You're going to get enough if you're eating them all within that whole day span. So if you eat a breakfast with some whole grain toast and then lunch, you have bean soup, eventually you're going to get all those amino acids that you need. Now, the highest protein-rich plant foods you can always aim for to make sure you're getting enough, especially if you're an athlete or someone who just needs a little bit more protein. You can just eat things like tempeh. Tempeh is a fermented soy product, really good for you. You can do tofu, which is my favorite way to get protein. I have plenty of good ways to cook it also on my YouTube channel if you're not a tofu lover.
For those of you who haven't tried tofu, and we've had this discussion before as well, Robin, I just eat it raw. I just eat it straight up. Even a little soy sauce on top or something like that, but just the way it is, throw it on some whole grain noodles or pasta, depending on what country you come from. And I'm the Italian, my wife is Chinese. And so she calls them noodles, I call it pasta. And But either way, you know, some tofu on top of that, it's just wonderful. Or in a sandwich with your favorite spread and some nice salad on it. Yeah. Tofu is amazing.
Tofu is amazing. I just made it for breakfast this morning. I scrambled it up like mock egg scramble and then threw some kale in there and different, you know, onions and spices. But yeah, tofu is probably one of my favorite plant-based proteins. Seitan is also an option. It's made from wheat gluten.
Right.
But lentils and beans, those are pretty much nice whole foods that you can get a lot of that have plenty of protein in it. So I'm a big fan of doing like bean chilies or lentil soups, or just throwing some beans in a salad is a great way to add protein to the salad and a ton of fiber. So you get best of both worlds when you do that.
And beans are so great because they're only a can away.
They're the easiest one, I would say, right? So you can open up a can of beans, rinse them off really quick, and throw them into anything. So if I'm eating a pasta dinner, actually pasta is a good source of protein too. Usually a serving pasta has like 9 grams of protein, and we add in a half cup of beans. Now we have about, you know, 16 grams of protein there. So it's really easy to just start accumulating different foods in there and counting the protein in all of them. And even vegetables have it, just not as much as the beans, but you can add some broccoli in there, spinach, and get protein that way as well. It's actually not too bad. A peanut butter and jelly sandwich. The peanut butter has protein in it. So does the bread. It's actually pretty easy to get. You just have to start rethinking what you thought was protein in the past and start looking at different labels and noticing how much protein there are in plant foods.
Now you say it as if we know it. Yeah, we don't need to combine anymore.
No.
But I lived through that, Frances Moore LaPay, and she came out, she wrote the book, Diet for a Small Planet. And
okay.
I lived through that book coming out and people really using it as a Bible. I used to study those protein charts and I'd eat my tofu with my mushrooms. And then she came out later and said, okay, I was wrong. It was at the time something we were really looking at. It's a lot easier now.
It's a lot easier now. And with all the, you know, there are some analogs, right? Some mock meats out there as well. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend them for everyday eating. But if you're someone who's so used to eating chicken or beef or things like that, and you want a mock meat, like a veggie sausage, I think it's fine to use that as a transitionary food or even just a, you know, a treat here and there. They do have protein in it, but usually they are more processed with salt and some kind of oils in it as well. But I think they're perfectly acceptable to have for a treat here or there, or something that reminds you of something you used to have, like, I don't know. So like a veggie sausage in your pasta dish, I think is totally fine. And they do have good sources of protein in those.
Right. As long as you're not sitting down and eating veggie sausages for lunch and dinner and then veggie burgers for breakfast with your veggie eggs and
Correct. Yes, I would spread it out. I would say back when I was experimenting, I think I did that, what you're saying, like have something for breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
I had a stomach. So it was just too much different processed things all in one day. And I learned my lesson from that. But now it's just like a treat. Once in a while, a Beyond Burger, or once in a while, I'll try a vegan cheese here and there just to see what the new one tastes like. But I honestly really enjoy eating more whole foods. So I don't even know if it's a treat anymore. It's kind of just experimenting with different foods. I like the whole foods. I like them a lot.
Yeah. It requires a shift in what you're looking for from your taste buds. But
yeah,
once you make that shift, things change and it becomes easier, more palatable, to the point where the old processed sugary white flour, white foods, they just don't taste good anymore. They taste one-dimensional.
Yeah, honestly, French fries is a big one that I've noticed because I still love potatoes, right? I make French fries all the time at home. I don't really like eating French fries when I go out anymore. Like, they're just not appealing to me. They're nothing like a fresh potato that you can fry up in your air fryer or in your oven. It's completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Good. You've mentioned some of them. What are some of your other favorite plant-based meals?
Yeah. So I feel like all I ever do is talk about food, but honestly, my favorite thing to have for dinner would be just a veggie burger and fries. I said that already. Tofu scrambles, or making a breakfast burrito with a tofu scramble. I actually made a bunch for my husband's work. So I was doing this before the pandemic hit. I was making breakfast burrito Fridays where I would make tofu scramble burritos for everybody to have them try it. And everyone loved them, if they're plant-based or not. They're just really, really good. Veggie sushi, I love. I don't live in New York anymore, but they have Beyond Sushi out in New York City. I think that is best sushi I've ever had in my entire life.
That's what we had at our wedding, Beyond Sushi.
It is so, they do such a good job.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Creative, delicious.
Oh, so that one's always good. And then easy things I like to do is just avocado toast, something simple like that. I love it. I love making smoothies, oatmeal bowls. I like doing stir fries with peanut butter and soy sauce, like doing kind of like a Thai stir fry flavor. And that's actually really easy to do. And then just making like tacos or burritos using lentils or beans and seasoning them up. Lots of guacamole involved there. But pretty much I like to eat all kinds of different foods, just making everything veggie.
Yeah, that's good. And when you're talking about an avocado toast, what do you do?
I'm very simple with it. It's just toast or a whole grain bagel. I usually go for the whole grain bagel after a long run in the morning. So then I'll get a little extra carbs in that. Take a avocado and just mash it. Put it on the toast or bagel and then sprinkle everything but the bagel seasoning on there from Trader Joe's, or now they have it at all kinds of stores where they buy that seasoning. So see everything seasoning and that. If I do have like an heirloom tomato, I like to slice that up and put it on top as well. There's nothing like really good summer tomatoes.
Yeah, we've yet to start our garden in our 5-year-old new house.
But oh, wow.
In terms of delicious things that grow from the grounds, we just discovered yesterday we have watermelon growing.
Oh, that's
watermelon really growing from our compost. So some of the seeds we just threw out there.
That's
so
really
we're very
cute.
Excited.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So if you look at people's pantries, mm-hmm. the standard American diet, you're going to see a lot of what's advertised on TV because we tend to eat what we're exposed to, what our families ate, what our friends eat, what the commercials we see are telling us people eat. But we've got to relook at a pantry now. So give us an idea of what we should have in our pantry, or if we're looking to optimize our health via our diet.
Yeah, sure. So I think we mentioned this before, canned beans, right? Canned beans are just the easiest thing you can do. Open them up, rinse them, they're ready to go. So I have plenty of canned beans. I also have dry beans. If I have more time, I like to cook them in the Instant Pot, make a big pot of beans. So dried beans, canned beans, some kind of whole grain. I have a bunch of them, but start with one that you like. So brown rice, quinoa, barley, farro, any whole grain you want, just pick one of those out and have that on the shelf. Oats, like oatmeal as well. So that's always in the pantry. Some kind of whole grain pasta I like to have, and cans of tomatoes so I can make a quick sauce or make a quick chili with those beans. Some things that maybe people haven't heard of, nutritional yeast. That one is a pantry staple for me. It makes things taste cheesy when you add it to plant-based foods. So it has a lot of B vitamins in it and has actually good protein in it. And
the brands that you like?
So I buy the one from Trader Joe's, but Bob's Red Mill has nutritional yeast as well. So I just buy what my stores have currently. Do you have a favorite brand?
I've used the Now, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I have to go look, but it
okay.
might be
there. Yeah,
really delicious.
Nutritional yeast is one of those kind of expensive specialty products for plant-based eaters. So I go to Trader Joe's and I think it's the most affordable that I've seen. So that's kind of where I go and load up on ingredients. So I would also recommend buying tahini. Tahini is made from sesame seeds. It's a really good.
Oh, it's good.
Like butter, like a seed butter that you can use to make dressings and sauces out of, especially if you're going to stop using a lot of oil. So a lot of whole food plant-based eaters don't use a ton of oil anymore or none. And then tahini is a great substitute for that. You can also make your own hummus with tahini. So I like to have that on hand. And nuts and seeds, just having nuts or seeds thrown into salads, or throw your flax seeds in your oatmeal bowl or smoothies. I like to use chia seeds to make some chia pudding. So different nuts and seeds is always good to have on hand. Spices, that's a big time pantry investment, is buying different kinds of spices, because I think food is more enjoyable when there's more flavor. So having some garlic powder, onion powder, paprika, chili powder, oregano, the list goes on and on. But having a good variety of spices will really help you make these really delicious recipes. If you're looking for snacks, I think nuts and dried fruit are always good snacks to have in the pantry that are always good in a pinch. But yeah, I think that's kind of, I think, the basics that I would recommend.
Great. It's a good amount of stuff to take in.
Yeah.
Some people are thinking that, well, if I move to plant-based or whole foods eating, it's going to be more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to that?
I say it can be if you're into all those trendy plant-based items. But like I've been saying this whole time, if you just start simple, it's very inexpensive. you know, especially in this time where I think meat prices are going up, you can definitely save a lot of money by eating things like whole grains. Whole grains are really inexpensive. Beans are like 50 cents a can. Dried beans are even cheaper. And not necessarily buying all the fruits and vegetables that are expensive. I always wait till things are on sale. I think there's always enough variety in the produce aisle that I just pick whatever's on sale that week. But I always have more of those inexpensive staples like potatoes, whole grains like oats or rice and whole grain pasta. Those are really inexpensive, but I have a video actually on my YouTube channel as well of how to buy plant-based on a budget at Aldi's. I think if you've ever been to Aldi's, it is one of the most inexpensive grocery stores I've been to. We have them out here in Virginia as well. And I get a ton of stuff there. So cheap, so inexpensive. And if I can't find everything I'm looking for there, at least I can get the bulk of my food and then I can get everything else somewhere else. They have really inexpensive bread, really good whole grain bread even too. Beans there are really inexpensive. Soy milk I buy there, or almond milk, is really inexpensive there, and all their produce. So they do have organic as well. If you're looking for organic, they have conventional as well. So I spend a lot of time there and get all the essentials, and then it makes everything less expensive.
I don't think I've ever seen them. Do they have them in New York?
They do, but I never went there when I lived there, but they have a few Aldi's. Yeah, I don't know.
How do you spell that?
A-L-D-I.
Oh, Aldi's. Okay.
But actually, they just opened a Lidl. Have you been to Lidl?
No.
They opened one of those in Huntington. My sister goes there, and that's similar to Aldi's prices. Oh, okay. Also, they're both German companies. So Aldi's is actually the sister company of Trader Joe's.
Ah, okay.
Great. More inexpensive, more budget-friendly Trader Joe's.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah, so you can't find everything. Like, they're not going to have nutritional yeast, but they have a lot of other stuff there that I really stock up on. And you can watch my video and you can see what they have there. But frozen fruit, they have good frozen fruit there, and they have great bread. I really do like it. So.
Great. So, you know, hearing you talk about all of this, I see, number one, having you be both the registered dietitian and a chef is really a very nice mix for a client coming to see someone who's, they don't, you know, if they just get the science and here's the food that you need to eat, and, you know, eat your beans, eat your greens.
Right.
It's one thing. But when you hear someone being able to put it together and make it taste good, that's really beneficial. And so I would imagine that you have some great successes with your clients who otherwise, again, as we mentioned, it's so confusing if you just go on the internet and happen to come across this video or that to know exactly how to eat and how to cook it and what the best choices are. But having a resource like you, I'll say it's really nice, really nice.
I really do think if the food tastes good, people will stick with it. So if we try something and they're like, oh, I don't like that, I'm not going to say, well, you have to eat it, it's healthy for you. I'll say, okay, let's find another recipe using tofu or beans that you do like, because there will be one. I think that there's always ways to make things taste a little bit better. And I think people get bored. They assume when they come see me that I'm going to tell them to eat like a rice cake with, you know, peanut butter on top as a snack. Like, right. They come up with a lot more, you know, unique and different snacks than that. I don't like to go to like the basic, like diet type foods. I like to eat really good meals, really big meals, because we can have big meals when you eat plant-based, because everything's so low in calories and so nutrient dense that you can have a huge salad or a huge meal and it's actually not going to be that much.
Yeah, that's great. So. Diet is a huge player when it comes to well-being, but it's not everything. Mm-hmm. And we're in this time of the pandemic where we're staying home and everything is different. So tell us about some activities that you recommend to stay social during this pandemic.
So I'm a little biased here because I love to run, but I have a running group where I'm at in Virginia and we run together. We made it so there's staggered times of different paces, so we don't have this big group running together. So we're trying to keep the group small. And we have wide enough trail system out here where we can all kind of spread out and chit chat in the morning. So that's been a great stress relief to just keep running when the gyms are closed and you can't really do much else.
When you say you run, you run.
I run.
You run. So talk about how much do you run when you run long distances?
I don't want to intimidate anybody. No. like today I ran 10 miles, but you usually aim for like 70 mile weeks. So, I was training for the Boston Marathon, which got canceled, unfortunately. But right now, it's kind of hard. That's why it's good to have community, because we all are running but not training for anything, because there's nothing to train for. So it's good to keep us each other like motivated at a time where, what are we racing for? You know, what are we running for? So the running group is very beneficial. I don't know what I would do without them, but we've gotten creative. So since we all can't hang out and do like barbecues together or anything, we're doing a lot of things over Zoom. So a friend on my running group started like a guided meditation group. We do it once a week where she just tells us some thoughts of self-compassion, and we all just sit there and listen, and we kind of de-stress that way. I started a book club with the book How Not to Die. I'm sure you love that book as well. I'm a big fan of that book, and I had so many people in my group that have heard of it or owned it and never even read it. So we decided to do a book club where we met weekly and talked about the book. And it was really great at a time like this for everyone to kind of focus on their nutrition. So I think everybody really soaked it up. And then I've done some cooking classes with everybody over Zoom as well. We kind of get all the ingredients together, and then I kind of cook, and we all cook together on Zoom. So there's fun things that you can do. My family and I, we play games together over Zoom, but yeah, it can be tough. It can be really tough, but I think staying social is important, or calling, you know, an old friend or someone you haven't spoke to in a while is really important. And just getting outside, get outside. It's hot out, but if you start early, it's kind of cool in the morning.
Right. Yeah. It is nice to be outside. I'll tell you, with the storm we just had, I was outside for a good part of the storm in a very protected area.
Okay.
But just being out there and witnessing the awesomeness of nature and the power is something that I would not recommend to others, but it's something that just changes you, because you understand that you are a little creature on what is really a very powerful force surrounding you. And it can unleash its fury or its beauty at any time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So these are so you mentioned meditation, exercise, mm-hmm. anything else for stress relief?
Cooking. I think cooking's
Yeah, that's right for you.
But no, stretching, yoga, watching a feel-good movie. I like to do that sometimes, just something that keeps me excited to watch, something that's lighthearted. So I'm not like consumed by the news and all the negativity going on. Sometimes it's good to just watch something for fun.
Sure.
I definitely keep some connections around, because it's hard, especially if you have no coworkers or anybody to talk to. I think staying social is key to staying healthy.
All right. We're going to wrap up soon. Anything else on boosting immune system during coronavirus?
Kind of what we talked about, just making sure to eat plenty of fruits and vegetables, antioxidant rich fruits and vegetables, and have them often. I think consistency is key. Consistency in your sleep habits, consistency in your eating habits and exercise habits. I know sometimes it's hard to get up early if you don't have to anymore. I don't know if people have the same commutes anymore. Maybe they're sleeping in more, but yeah. I think being a healthy routine is, I think, something that can keep you getting through this pandemic if you are working from home or have other stress. So sticking to a routine, consuming the healthy foods consistently, and getting enough sleep are very, very important.
All right, great. So if people have taken this information to heart and they want to start implementing a move toward a new healthful diet, immune boosting recipes and everything else, where can they go to get these recipes? What do you recommend as your best sites?
Okay, so first I'm going to throw out my YouTube channel. I just started during the pandemic. So I only have a couple handfuls of recipes that I started, but they're more than welcome to check me out on my Upbeat RD is my YouTube channel.
Upbeat RD.
Upbeat RD.
That's up BEET or BEAT?
BEET, like the B, yeah. And then _RD. That's something I started during the pandemic. So I guess that's another stress reliever that I did, or something to keep me social, was making these YouTube videos.
We'll post all of these, by the way, on our website.
Awesome. And my favorite places that are not my own, I guess. Actually, I love, if you're ever on Instagram, so Plant-Based RD, she's someone I used to work with a long time ago. She has the best recipes. They're all extremely simple, colorful plates, and she always posts whatever she's making. She posts her ingredients. She started a blog as well, plantbasedrdblog.com, and she's accumulating a ton of recipes so far. And I actually go there a lot for my own clients. I recommend her recipes because I know they're going to be good, tested, and healthy. So I love her recipes. Minimalist Baker is a great one too. Not everything on her site is plant-based anymore, but she has a ton, like hundreds and hundreds of recipes that are all pretty easy to do. And I go there for a lot of things.
And that was Minimalist Baker?
Minimalist Baker. Yeah. She has a lot of recipes, and she's, I would say 90% of them are plant-based.
Good.
Oh, She Glows is another good blog, and they have good cookbooks. So she's a good cookbook app as well. And then Forks Over Knives. Forks Over Knives is just a good educational website that has recipes and success stories of people that have gone plant-based and reversed some kind of disease or just feel better or lost weight. They also have a movie online on Netflix. I believe they have it still as a documentary. That's one that really spoke to me. So I always recommend Forks Over Knives, the documentary, and then Forks Over Knives, the website, or even the book. They have it all covered. If you like to read, if you like to watch. So any of those, I think, would get you started.
Great. Great. Perfect. Any final thoughts before we end for the evening?
I would just say, don't be so hard on yourself. I would say if you do try this, don't give up and go at your pace. Honestly, I think this should be fun. If it's not fun, then you're doing it wrong. So I think if you need advice as well, reach out to maybe your plant-based community. There's a lot of good resources on Long Island and in New York, or find a dietitian that can help you. I'm always here as well.
Fantastic. Well, Robin, your words are great. Your energy is great. And it's good to have the package where you're putting together the information with the recipes and the joy of eating healthfully. So thank you for joining us and for all the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. That's Robin Engman, registered dietitian and trained chef with Nutrition in Motion. You can find out more about her and Nutrition in Motion at www.nimrd. Nutrition in Motion, NIM. RD as in registered dietitian.com. You can also call Robin and Nutrition in Motion at 603-518-5859. That's 603-518-5859. And we're in a virtual world now, so being in North Carolina doesn't mean anything for all of us in New York. On that note, we will end for the evening. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, and I want to thank you for listening to The Healthy Planet. I'll be with you again next on Friday, September 4th, at this same time, that's right at 6 p.m., for more info on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, or if you're interested in having me do a virtual presentation to your school or group, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org or email us to join our mailing list at info@healthyplanetusa.org. Also, like our Facebook page, which is at Healthy Planet USA. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen to Natural Alternatives and The Healthy Planet shows every week at this time with great hosts such as Dr. Eugene Zamperone and Beth Vitenny sharing cutting-edge health and environmental information every week at this time, Fridays at 6 p.m. Until next time, stay strong, keep moving even at home, relax, try new recipes, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four-legged friends, and enjoy this beautiful world that we all share. Good night.
Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. All things and what they used to be oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience, but every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.